Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again with our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. As always, a heartfelt thank you to all of our followers, both here in the United States and internationally. It's been a pleasure each and every week to have the opportunity and the privilege to talk with you guys. Several people have reached out to have some guest speakers coming up the next few weeks or few months. But as always, I thoroughly enjoy doing this, and I appreciate your support and confidence in the information that we're putting out there. So I kind of go back and forth between more the very clinical stuff and more philosophical or existential, because I think both definitely play a role in the continuum of our human experience and our shared collective experience. But I did an episode, I think, 2 weeks ago on intermittent explosive disorder, and I thought it would be appropriate to kind of revisit that category and talk about oppositional defiant disorder. Now, this is one, a common referral question that I get as a neuropsychologist when kids demonstrate behavioral problems. And this is a disorder that is pretty much specific to, you know, childhood and adolescence. You don't diagnose somebody in their, you know, late 20s and mid 40s with oppositionality. That could be something else like intermittent explosive disorder. But this is a very common disorder, and it tends to co-occur very frequently with ADHD, generally the hyperactive type or the combined type, where you have hyperconnectivity and inattention. And you can go back to the episodes on ADHD that I've done to talk about that. So I think there's a higher prevalence of oppositionality in the world that we live in, given the access to technology, the access to the internet and social media. And, you know, here in the United States, and I'm not sure if it's across the country, but at least, you know, in Massachusetts, they basically just, you know, gave kids Chromebooks and iPads and MacBooks and, you know, keys to the universe in terms, you know, whether the modified educational, you know, educational curriculum is, without the foresight of kids not really having the ability to regulate and understand not only their own behaviors or emotions, but the behaviors and emotions of others. And you essentially let kids into Willy Wonka's chocolate factory without any foresight that there is absolutely no supervision whatsoever. So oppositional defiant disorder, and if you are a parent out there, this will resonate with you, or if you were a child who had this, a lot of this will resonate with you. So when I go through the disorders, I've become more conscientious and diligent about making notes throughout the week, so I can, again, because we have such a vast variety of listeners, from students who are in the field to people who use this program for clinical supervision for their agencies, to individuals who might be going into the field, and also people who are struggling with a psychiatric condition and or are in relationship with somebody who is. So I do my best to try to make it as down earth, but as, you know, also give it the legitimacy it deserves. So, you know, oppositionality is really kind of marked by two things. It's this angry and irritable mood. The kids are often losing their temper. They're touchy, easily annoyed, angry, resentful. And you can almost kind of see this. And sometimes, you know, if I'm doing two evals a day, and I could hear this sometimes in the waiting room, like, oh boy, this is going to be one of those evals. The second thing is they're argumentative and defiant. They argue with authority figures. you know, adults, teachers, anybody who's any perceived sense of authority, they actively defy. This is deliberate behavior. I don't think I've done an episode on disruptive mood dysregulation disorder, but this is different. This is deliberate defiance, especially with requests from authority figures, and that could even be maybe an older sibling, or maybe a teacher's aides. It doesn't have to be somebody in the an absolute parental figure, but these individuals deliberately annoy others, and they have a high external locus of control, and they blame everyone else for their mistakes and their misbehavior. Very little insight into the nature and their behavior. Again, what's concerning about this is problematic. This is not disruptive mood dysregulation disorder, where the behavioral manifestations of both this and oppositional defiant disorder are very much the same. It's that with this specific pathology, the behavior is purposeful and it's deliberate. These individuals, the symptoms are generally, in a lot of cases, confined to one setting, and that's usually the home. And that's what we would call, if we were giving it severity level, mild, where the symptoms are present in pretty much one environment only, like home, school, Boys and Girls Club with the peers. Moderate is when some symptoms are present in at least two settings, and severe is when the symptoms are present in three or more settings. And I generally see the more of the moderate and severe types. And won't get into it at this point, but when it's relegated to one specific environment, it's generally because there's something going on in that environment, and it's no excuse. Like I've said, explanation is not justification, but when it's contained to one environment, it's a little easier to kind of parse out what is the precipitating factor for this, to explain this behavior. When it's across all environments, you're worried about the child adopting this mindset and this worldview that the world is a hostile place, and I'm number one, and I don't really care who I hurt or what I do, because it's about psychological survival. And this goes back to, Darwinian theory, that at our basic core, we are animals, and we are designed to do one of two things, but one most importantly, and that is to survive. And when you psychological survival can be just as amped up and dangerous sometimes as behaviors we engage in to maintain physiological survival. It really impairs the functioning, and these behaviors are common among siblings. You observe this, you see this. I see this in my office. Parent asks, I ask a child a question. I say, will you answer? And the language. I'm no saint. I try not to swear on the podcast, although Julie doesn't seem to abide to that, but it's the symptoms of oppositional defiant disorder can occur to some degree in individuals without the disorder. It's really determining, are these behaviors symptomatic of something else, or is it truly oppositional defiant disorder? And you really have to get to a point of, are these behaviors within the normative expectations of how someone responds? And when you get into a realm where you're putting disorder on it, the answer is no. These are not congruent with age, environment, with expectations. But it's not unusual for preschool children to show temper tantrums on a weekly basis. So temper tantrums for a preschool child would be considered a symptom, I think, of ODD, only if they occurred more days than not for at least 6 months. So this is not just having a bad day or being cranky. This is a persistent pattern of behavioral dysregulation lasting at least 6 months. And again, it could, you know, these temper tantrums, there's a lot of impairment that can lead to, you know, destruction. Like I talked about, intermittent explosive disorder, destruction of property during these outbursts. Kids can be kicked out of school. Physical altercations are very common. Rooms are torn apart. Technology, you know, broken iPads, broken cell phones. It's a whole range of behaviors that the child, you know, is demonstrating. And what, again, what I think is the concerning part with this specific pathology is it's deliberate. They lack insight, but they're well aware and they are purposely choosing to engage in these behaviors. And I've said that ad nauseum throughout the, you know, as many episodes as I have, if this is relevant, all behavior is purposeful. We choose behaviors and we only repeat behaviors because our dopamine system says, I like what I got from that. Independent of you look it back and look at the, you know, the social constructs or the societal expectations or the values or the ethics or the mores or the cultural norms, that's irrelevant. I'm gonna repeat a behavior, good, bad, right, wrong, and different, because it has some value to me. But you know, these symptoms are generally part of a pattern of problematic interactions with other people. Kids and individuals with this disorder, they don't really see themselves as angry or oppositional or defiant or mean. They have with a high external locus of control, they really seem justified that their behavior is in response to some, what they perceive as some unreasonable demand or circumstance. They believe they are completely justified in acting the way they do. And, you know, their sorries are really lip service in many cases, you know, prior to getting into treatment, to accept responsibility for their behavior. And, you know, it's like, yes, I'm sorry, it'll never happen again. And this is kind of how it usually starts off. And, you know, okay, they get their phone back and, you know, they turn their back, you know, they're showing tears to mom and dad. And then as soon as they get their phone back and go upstairs, they're kind of laughing with that Cheshire grin, like, I got you. And, you know, in Russell Barkley's model, this specific disorder is on the trajectory of antisocial personality disorder and sociopathy. ADHD to ODD to conduct disorder to antisocial personality disorder. Again, Russell Barkley, his work is really, really well done. And this trajectory and this model has been proven over and over and over again. And so because, you know, I think because these kids, they justify their behavior, it's really hard to disentangle, you know, what the contribution of the person is to the perceived insult, to who committed this perceived transgression, to, you know, because these kids, like, you know, then they're looking and say, yeah, I did it and they deserved it. And that's concerning, because you worry about lack of empathy, and lack of empathy is one of those, is, you know, if you stay current in the literature and the research, they found, you know, in pediatric bipolar disorder, lack of empathy is one of the factors in pediatric onset bipolar disorder, along with purposeful violence. So, you know, in kids with who have oppositional defiant disorder, you know, if you look at their history, a lot of times they have a history of hostile parenting, and it's hard to determine if the child's behavior caused the parents to act, you know, in a more aggressive way because they were so out of control that the parents just got so frustrated, because we all have our thresholds for what we can tolerate. You know, and I've talked about, like, you know, I'll do a full episode on, you know, Ross Green's model of, you know, the basket technique, because I've referenced it multiple times, because that's how you really treat this. But, you know, is the hostile parenting, is it an artifact of the parents' just pure frustration, and that they're just they're, I mean, I've had parents who've said, you know, they've taken the phone away, they've taken the TV away, they've taken the Xbox, the PlayStation, they've taken the door off, and the child will sit there and they'll just look at a blank stare, like, go ahead, and who's gonna blink first? You know, where parents have taken, you know, pretty much everything except the mattress out of a kid's room. And, you know, when you have nothing left to take away, it becomes kind of concerning, because what, you know, yes, but there are ways to treat this. But again, are the parents' behaviors in response to the child, or were the parents just hostile to begin with, and the child's behavior is in reaction to that? Like, fine, we just grew up in this chaotic, toxic environment, and everybody's angry, and everybody's irritable, and everybody's, you know, doing this. So, you know, this is, you know, learning theory. And so it's kind of hard to disentangle. But when a parent brings a child in for a neuropsych eval, or for medication, or for, you know, psychotherapy, you know, I think if you look, just step back at the generalized umbrella, is, well, that kid is the identified patient. And, you know, I've seen this, I've come across it, and, you know, kids are going to argue, and these are the kids that are just going to, you know, give, you know, yes, no answers during a structured clinical interview. They're going to, you know, if you're doing the IQ testing, they're going to throw the blocks, or they're just going to sit there, or they're going to kick the chair. They're going to kick the desk. And, you know, they can be really annoying. And, you know, it doesn't justify any form of abuse at all. But, you know, these kids they're incredibly behaviorally dysregulated. So, you know, whether a clinician can separate the contributions of, you know, the causative factors, it still warrants the appropriate diagnosis of this disorder. So, you know, yes, we are products of the environment. I think there is a huge environmental component to this, especially when you see the kids with, you know, the ADHD, the type, the hyperactive, and the combined type, because the kids are so motorically dysregulated, usually like around third, fourth, maybe fifth grade at the later end, you know, the peer groups start to form, and these kids start to get ostracized. So if you just take the child who's just behaviorally dysregulated, or I'm sorry, attentionally dysregulated, and, you know, they're kicking the chair, and you know, okay, first grade, it's so funny, second grade, it's like, all right, you know, third grade, it's like, all right, this is getting annoying, you know, and we don't want to hang around with you. And so the peer group ostracizes these kids. And they go to this side of the playground. Well, guess who else is on that side of the playground? The other kids who've been ostracized. So they develop almost not antisocial personality, but they start to develop an asocial stance. Like, you know what? You think I'm a bad kid, you treat me like a bad kid, I'm going to act like a bad kid. So it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, so environmental factors play a huge role in the development. And that's why, you know, ADHD is one of the most common co-occurring, or we call it comorbid, conditions with obsessive defiant disorder. And it's, you know, these symptoms can appear, you know, usually will appear during preschool, like I said, rather than later adolescence. It's not going to appear in you know, adulthood. And obsessive defiant disorder precedes conduct disorder. And a vast majority of kids with obsessive defiant disorder will develop conduct disorder. And it does require, you know, other medications, yes, but again, like with the personality disorders, this is, you know, this is behavioral change, and this is behavioral psychology. And I'm talking like ABA, like applied behavioral analysis with autism. But, you know, like, again, I will go through, you know, the basket technique, because I've worked with a lot of families in helping them develop this. And when you work with kids, you realize a lot, and the irony is a lot of the work with kids is not working with the kids themselves, but working with the parents or whoever the primary caregivers are, because they control the rewards. They control the consequences. If you look up natural and logical and natural consequences, those are concepts by Alfred Adler. And a great book on parenting that's older, but it is still very relevant today, by Rudolf Dreikers, is Children, the Challenge. They didn't really, I don't think they had this diagnosis back then, but they certainly had these same behaviors and these same problems. But I would definitely encourage you, if you want a great book on parenting, Children, the Challenge by Rudolf Dreikers. So what was I saying? So the defiant, argumentative, vindictive symptoms that carries the intensity of those carries, I think, the most risk for conduct disorder. Whereas if it's just this angry and irritable mood, the kids are more prone to develop a mood disorder, depression, anxiety, possible bipolarity. But you cannot have oppositional defiant disorder and disruptive mood dysregulation disorder at the same time. They cannot be diagnosed concurrently. Because I said, let me make that point again. The argumentativeness and the vindictiveness, but more at risk for conduct disorder. The angry, irritable individuals are more at risk for a mood disorder. And then many of these behaviors with ODD, they increase. They increase in frequency. They increase in intensity. They increase in severity. Sometimes individuals wind up in what's called, a CBAT or a residential program, and which can be good and can be bad, because sometimes, are you reinforcing the behavior by having a child, hospitalized? I mean, obviously, if someone's a danger to themselves or others, hospitalization is necessary. But, I think sometimes it can backfire. If, who goes to hospital? Who goes to residential people, sick people? Who goes to, is locked up in, DYS, bad people? And, you worry about the development of this self-fulfilling prophecy. And not everybody who's involved in the correctional system, a vast majority, do not have a clinical background at all. And, that's a whole, episode in and of itself, and in the work that we need to do with the legal system and, correctional systems, in terms of being able to understand that some, behaviors are coming from a psychiatric perspective and do not warrant handcuffs, do not warrant, police jumping on people. And I've seen and worked with people who've had these experiences. So, the work of Thomas and Chess about temperament, I think, definitely factors in. Some people just have a lower threshold for reactivity. Harsh, inconsistent, neglectful child, child raising practices are very common in families of children diagnosed with ODD. There could also be substance abuse and, parental neglect. And the child is, parentified at a young age and may be very resentful to their parents for that. But it's oppositional defiant disorder is treatable. The earlier that you can get this under control, the better off it is. It's hard to deal with, when you get to even like conduct disorder, 16, 17 years old, here in the United States at 18, kids become adults. And, the consequences at 18 are very different than the consequences at 8. That's when the legal system gets involved, and that's why antisocial, you have to be 18 to get that diagnosis. But I've worked with kids who, you see that if this doesn't get corrected, this child is on the road for pretty, for that type of pathology. But it does really require a strong foundation from a treatment perspective and cognitive behavioral psychotherapy. This is not dropping the child off once a week for therapy. This is imploding the child with therapeutic mentoring, in-home behavioral therapy, a lot of times equine therapy, which is really good in helping kids learn how to develop, or any form of pet therapy, but equine therapy in particular, for helping kids to learn how to develop and foster a sense of empathy. So it's definitely relevant. You'll see, like in Rorschach responses, a lot of aggression, a lot of even the thematic gap perception test, a lot of aggression, a lot of hostility, a lot of blood, a lot of morbid responses, because their view of the world is it's hostile, and they're in fight or flight mode, and the behaviors can be very egregious, and it's really concerning when there's that lack of empathy, when there's that complete lack of disregard. And that's why, the angry, irritable, those are going more towards the mood disorder, the developing the depression, developing the possible bipolarity, could be OCD, could be something along those lines. It's that vindictiveness that is much more concerning, because there's more of a darkness in those individuals. And it doesn't mean everybody's had a history of trauma, but these are generally, in my experience, have not found these kids were the product of this wonderful Norman Rockefeller picturesque lifestyle, that there were transgressions that were either perpetrated on the individual intentionally or unintentionally, and they've adopted this view that, this is about me, and I'm gonna lose my temper, I'm gonna get annoyed, I can be vindictive, no one's gonna tell me what to do. And again, like I said, it makes sense the earlier you can catch this. But one of the fundamental rules of behavioral psychology and behavioral change is, once you start to put in a behavioral modification program and you start to change the rules, the dynamics, and the consequences, behavior will always get worse before it gets better. And it's ironic, but that is a good cross-check that whatever intervention you are putting in place is working. But we are all humans, and we all have the threshold. We all have the, we can all have the tolerance level. So if you take the phone away, and the child is screaming at the top of the lungs, "I hate you, I'm gonna kill myself, I can't stand it." And you just read, you had a long day at work, and you just want to relax, and you just read it. It's like fingernails on chalkboard, and the phone is part of the behavioral modification program, and you finally just say, "Here, just take the phone," just to shut the child up. It makes perfect sense. But now the ceiling becomes the floor, and the kid realizes, "I got you." So it's not impossible, but it does take work. It takes a collective effort of strong treatment providers, who really know how to do this stuff. Sometimes, there's biting, there's kicking, there's swearing, there's all sorts of things. But it is on the road to antisocial personality disorder. And definitely the work of Ross Green, The Explosive Child, is a book that I have used and read in grad school, have referenced this, and have worked recommended this to so many parents, and so many families, even teachers. But if you're struggling with this, I would definitely check that book out. You can get it off of Amazon. You can also get the book Children: The Challenge off of Amazon. But this is a very severe disorder, and I'll do an episode in the very near future on conduct disorder, because it's really the amped up version of this. So until next time, feel free to reach out through psychologyunplugged@outlook.com. You can get a hold of me through Psychology Today. You can follow us on Instagram at psychology_unplugged_. And you can contact me directly at 617-750-9411 East Coast Standard Time in the United States. Until next time, keep sending me questions, keep sending me topics. I love talking to you guys, and I appreciate that. And I will talk to you guys next week. All right, thanks. Bye, guys.